You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
The Hallway Trilogy is a trio of plays by Adam Rapp, all set in the same Lower East Side tenement hallway over the course of a century. The first play, Rose, takes place in 1953, the second, Paraffin, in 2003, and the last, Nursing, in 2053. The plays have a cast of 14 actors and three directors, and they're being presented in rotation at the Rattlestick Playwrights Theater in the West Village. The run has been extended until March 27th, and I'm very pleased to welcome the playwright, along with two of the actors, Julianne Nicholson and Louis Cancelmi, to our show today. Hello.
Hey, thanks
Hello.
For having us.
Adam, in addition to writing this trilogy, you also directed the first play, Rose. The others are directed by Daniel Auchin and Trip Cullman. Would it have been too much for one person to have directed all three?
Yeah, absolutely. It was almost too much for me to direct the first one, you know, having to keep my eye on the other two plays. There was talk of it about 6 months ago, and I was trying to go through it in my mind how I would do it, and it just, I think I would be, I'd have 12 years less of my life if I would have attempted
it. But there's been a debate over the years as to whether a playwright should direct his or her own work. The upside is that you know the work very well and you know what you want. The downside is that you consider it too precious and don't really allow for outside ideas to come in.
Yeah, I think that's true. If I didn't love it so much and I didn't love working with actors so much and I didn't learn how to be less precious with my own words, I think I'd probably fall into that bad category. But I've kind of fallen in love with the idea that the directing is just a continuation of the authorship, and then the actors ultimately author the play, and so that's kind of what my process is, and I like doing it, and I'm gonna keep doing it, and I love working with other directors too. This is the first time I've done that in a long time, but Daniel and Tripp did an incredible job.
And so I suspect that there was a certain amount of learning from others as well. Julianne, many people know you as Detective Megan Wheeler in Law & Order Criminal Intent, and you've appeared in many films. But you've also been doing a lot of theater in New York. Was theater your first love, as it is with so many actors?
No, actually, it's been very – I did my first play, I think, 11 years ago. And then I haven't done a play since until last year. I did my second play, and then I've done – this will make three and four for me in a year. So it's actually – it's something I always wanted to do. I always felt like I couldn't get cast in a play. I would always come close but never get the job, and then I just sort of didn't want to audition anymore because it was making me totally depressed. And now I feel really, especially with this latest project, embraced by the community, and I feel really – proud and excited about that.
Well, here you play somebody who's totally depressed.
There you go. So as luck would have it, I'm depressed.
Didn't you and Lewis work together in This by Melissa James Gibson at the Playwrights Horizons?
We did. That was the second play I ever did at Playwrights Horizons a year and a half ago. And
the same director?
Daniel Auchin, who directed Paraffin, which is the one set in 2003, which is one of the plays that I'm in also. Yeah, it's like a reunion of sorts.
Is New York theater like that? You keep working with the same people in different projects?
In my very limited experience, it has been that way, which is really nice, actually. Yeah.
Well, sometimes I've been told, someone will say, well, you know, I work with this person, she'd just be perfect for the part.
Right. I guess that's the idea. Work begets work, and you know, the people who are coming to see you are hopefully the people that you'll be wanting to work with, so... I think yes.
Well, Lewis, this trilogy has a number of scenes that are not for the squeamish, yeah. But people may remember you from the Sarah Kane play Blasted at Soho Rep, one of the goriest plays I've ever seen. So this one is a piece of cake in comparison.
I guess relatively, at least for me, although I get to have a few little gory interactions in Nursing, mm-hmm. The last play of the trilogy. But this is not it's not quite as extreme as Blasted, maybe, although I don't know.
And you're not as bad.
Well, I'm not personally, no.
Adam, how did the idea for this trilogy come to you? Were you living in a tenement building on the Lower East Side, or did you go to the Tenement Museum and think, gee, that might be...
Actually, it's interesting you asked that. I did go to the Tenement Museum, but I didn't go until after I had written Rose, which I started writing about 4 years ago. I live in the East Village, and I've been living in the same building. It'll be 20 years in May, and it's a fourth floor walk up. And I was just one day, you know, walking upstairs, and I was thinking about like how in these very neutral zones in our life, which are like hallways and waiting areas and, you know, airport gates and places like that, like there's not a lot of dramatic events that take place there. And so I thought it would be an interesting challenge to see how I could justify a lot of dramatic events taking place there.
And Rose has a payphone in the hall, something that people would share at least in the 50s. Now, of course, everybody has a cell phone. Did you set yourself the challenge of writing three plays, one historical, one contemporary, one futuristic?
Yeah,
all at the
I
same
did.
Location?
And I was very intimidated for a long time about writing a period piece, and especially intimidated about directing one. So I assigned myself the challenge of that, first of all.
Well, Rose probably takes place before you were born.
Yeah, I was born in the late 60s, so it was pretty far before my time. But I remember, you know, I remember my mother talking about living in Chicago and having a payphone in the hall, and how she met my dad in the laundry room, and just those sort of interactions that took place in those days that I don't know that happen as much now. We can kind of hide out in our own little rooms and give ourselves over to technology. But without cell phones and computers and all that, I think there was probably a different kind of discourse on a daily basis, and people actually had to contend with each other. So that was one of the things I was thinking about as well, and just how moments happen between people and the kind of neutral corridor of our lives. But it was intimidating, but I really enjoyed, I watched some old movies. And actually, 4 years ago, we took a group of actors that actually Lewis was involved with in the very first workshop of Rose. We took a group of actors up to Hunter, New York, and I had written about half the play. And we all were like researching together, and we were all kind of dramaturging the play around a table. And it was great. Guy Boyd, who's the older actor in the play, was around back then, so he had a lot of interesting insights. And we tried to make it as believable as possible.
And we're seeing that more and more, aren't we, Lewis? Workshopping plays as they're in development.
Yeah, indeed. I mean,
so as an actor, do you have more input? Is that important for you?
Well, I don't know that it's necessarily important for me personally to have input into the play, but I do appreciate, obviously, and I think it's helpful to the process to have a director and writer who's responsive to, to what I'm experiencing as an actor as I'm working on a role, and working on this for as long as we have. Like Adam, you know, from the very beginning it was a back and forth.
Well, tomorrow we have Tom Stoppard coming on the show, and he gets involved in pretty much every rehearsal he can of his plays. Some people hate when the playwright shows up. In this case, you're dealing with the playwright as your director as well in the first play.
Yeah. I mean, it's actually really Adam is not precious at all, in fact, about things. And he's, maybe it's also he's worked on that particular play for so long. But really, it's sort of the best idea in the room, and that's how we kind of went forward.
Well, Rose takes place on the day after Eugene O'Neill's death. Is O'Neill a favorite playwright?
He's one of my favorites, yeah. He's definitely someone I aspire to attempt to approach some version of his career.
Although this is more Odette's or Arthur Miller, isn't it? Because it involves a motley group of lefties and artistic types.
Yeah, there's some of that in there too, and there's even a little bit of Tennessee Williams in there, I think, which I was reading a lot of those plays when I was writing it. So I think there's lots of different flavors.
And Julianne, you play Mary, who is not political.
No,
she's got other issues.
She does.
Why is she living in the building?
Her sister lives in the building, and she's moved in with her sister just a few months before, because she had a relationship. She was about to get married, and then she has an affair with a younger man and is caught, and her fiancé leaves her, and she is without anything in the world.
Although she is an object of obsession by Lewis's character.
That's
and I noticed
right.
when you came in, you made sure to not sit next to him.
Well, I do like to have at least one person between us at all times. Lewis is just that good.
Lewis also is playing a Princeton grad who could have gotten a job on Wall Street, but is a young communist. This is 53.
Right.
This is the time of McCarthyism.
Right. And yeah, a young communist, but also it's not with Jerry. I feel like it's not always. You can't necessarily take what he says at face value. Like I'm never really sure if he could he get a job on Wall Street. Could he go to medical school? All those things. I'm not totally sure about him. He's not necessarily reliable as a narrator of his own experience.
And the tenants spend a lot of time in the hallway because the super, whose name is Eugene O'Neill, not the playwright, has locked them out. He takes advantage of his tenants, especially if they're even a day late with the rent. There was rent control at the time, wasn't there?
No, it was just on the cusp of that. It was from my research that I did, but it was a time when the rents were there was still a I guess there was a period of time when supers were acting as kind of middlemen between landlords and tenants and I thought this guy was maybe going to extort some money and try to make his way out of the building and escape to Florida because the neighborhoods were changing. And the thing that's most interesting to me is in 1938 the zoning, the way they rezoned the buildings, had all these rules about the fire escapes and the banisters couldn't be wooden anymore, and the staircase had to be fireproofed and all that stuff. And a lot of the buildings in the Lower East Side fell out because of it, and they basically didn't have they were condemned for a long time.
People still lived in them.
Yeah, and actually, one of the characters in the play that's who I imagined had sort of was living in the building all that time was the mute, who's the known as Marbles. So I was trying to attempt to tell that story in a subtle way as well, but just how these buildings came back to being and how the neighborhood, you know, these buildings were bought by business people and families, and that's the Italian guy who comes in, and he's putting pressure on O'Neill to actually run a legitimate building, even though he might have money from sort of mob money. He wants to be a good neighborhood guy, and Danny Mastrogiacomo plays that part. And we discussed that a lot about what his actual what his intentions are with O'Neill, and I think O'Neill is feeling very much pressured by this new arrangement, and he wants to, you know, steal some money and get out of town as quickly as possible.
And there's another character for whom Eugene O'Neill is particularly important, but we can't. I want to go into the second play, Paraffin, which takes place in 2003 on the day of the blackout. So we have Eugene O'Neill's death, and then we have the blackout. Comparable. Were you in New York at that point?
I was. I was here. I was in my room writing a novel, and it was a beautiful day, and I remember it was like the most beautiful day of the year, and suddenly like the power in the building went down, and it was I could hear birds, and I remember how sunny it was, and then as the day wore on, I just remember there was a kind of lawlessness that started to take place. I had a friend come over who was meeting me, and I she's an old friend of mine. I came back home after I went out on the street, and she hooked up with my roommate, and it was just it was that kind of night. Like it felt like everyone's moral compass went askew a bit, and then when the darkness set in, then all this sort of permission to behave as wildly as one wanted seemed to happen, and I think that's one of the things we're trying to discuss with the play.
Well, Julian, you play the central character in that. Talk about moral compass. Margot is the pregnant wife of a rock musician who's also a junkie.
The rock musician is a junkie. Yes. Yes,
so,
I do.
This is not something
you have much experience with.
No. Yeah. Can you relate to that?
I can, actually. But I wasn't here for that blackout, but I had just moved to California, having lived here for 10 years, and I felt like I really missed out on something because I meant.
Wasn't that great, Julian?
Well, maybe not for everybody.
I was
no,
here.
But okay. You weren't like.
Wow.
Okay, we don't. We can
but everybody
talk about
does
it when the
remember
microphone
what you they were doing that day,
right? And I love this play. I love all the plays, and I'm such a huge fan of Adams for so long. So I'm so excited to be a part of this project. It's been really amazing to work with this group of people. But I love this play. She's pregnant. This play opens with her husband passed out on the floor of the hallway, having had a full night the night before. And then it just sort of goes from there. And I think Adam has done an amazing job. It's, for me, it feels like, especially in this one, of creating this life with so many people in this hallway, but having it still feel so believable. And there's no character where you feel like, where did he come from? That would never happen. It's just this amazing bunch of people that find themselves in this one place on this one day.
And then the third play, Nursing, is set in 2053.
It's crazy.
The building has become the Museum of Disease and Nursing because all disease has been eradicated. And I'm assuming that, based on what we said earlier, Adam, that you would think about the Lower East Side Tenement Museum when you wrote it. People go there to see how immigrants lived 100 years ago, even though the neighborhood is now rapidly becoming gentrified. Might you have alternatively written that play as taking place in the luxury condos that the tenement has been turned into?
Yeah, it's one of the stories I was attempting to tell. I was excited by the idea and the possibility that you could come to parts one and two and really live in that hallway with the tenants, and then part three being a completely different architectural experience, and the way that our buildings get, you know, what you just said, how things gentrify and how neighborhoods change and how suddenly, you know, the gap has become, you know, some pizza place. There's, especially in my neighborhood, in my block, I live on 10th Street, and the storefronts are so small that it doesn't ever get very corporate. Like, you don't see the Starbucks and you don't see a lot of the chains there. And so there's a real mom and pop feel that's really kind of cool. But when you get to Second Avenue, for some reason, the storefronts get bigger. And I just remember seeing so many different kinds of stores just in rotation. Like every 6 months, it seems to change. And I think that's an important story to try to tell. So that's what I was trying to do, basically.
Lewis, in Rose, you're playing this troubled, perhaps communist. In Nursing, you're a male nurse, a very different personality.
Mm-hmm.
Is that part of the fun? Being such different characters, because I wonder about whether it's fun for the audience if you see all three plays to match up the actors with the characters. For example, the mobster in one play is the super in the next, or an Israeli housewife in one play is a politically radical nurse in another.
Absolutely. I think that is, I mean, from the actor's perspective, and I assume from the audience's perspective, it is really fun to see somebody do one thing then another thing that's very different. And it's a fun thing to do.
What about performing in this space? It's a very long, narrow stage because it's a long hallway.
Yeah.
And the theater itself is long. And
it's even smaller backstage. You basically have to go down, like, sort of on your side, or you're going to get stuck back there. And you have to be so quiet because it's basically paper between separating the backstage from the front of stage. And, you know, sometimes you'll be on there and you'll hear somebody coughing in the background. It's like, okay, now, like, we have to be very careful. And
but you don't have to really shout your lines as you might in a big house, because I think the audience goes back about four rows,
right.
But it's very wide.
Right. Yeah.
It does get tricky. Extreme house, extreme stage left or right. Sometimes if you're on the opposite side in the audience, and it's deceptively, they do have to like shout a little more than they think they would. But we figured all that out during tech.
And the Rattlestick, I understand, had to completely reconfigure the theater in order to accommodate this play?
Yeah, they took about 2 weeks or almost 3 weeks, I think, around between Thanksgiving and Christmas, and it was incredible what they did. I've had about three or four of my things done there. And when I walked in, when they had just built the very, very early phases of the stage, I could not believe my eyes. And it's wild what they're doing, and it's
well, they turned everything around. The stage is where the audience used to be sitting, and
exactly,
plus they have this small group of people that after every show they break down between every show to set up from 1953 to 2003, and you know you're literally not even out of your costume yet, and you hear the like drills as they're like pulling off walls and doors.
It's amazing what they're doing. Everything for the other whatever show you're doing, everything for the other two shows is backstage with you, ladders and flats and all the stuff for the changeover is all there. So,
on our website, we have a list of when different things are being performed, but all three are on Sundays. Is that the easiest way to do it if you want to see all three?
Yeah, I think so. Next week, I think you can see Nursing on Thursday and Saturday, and I think the extension is dealing with all of it. It's I think going to smarttix.com or going to the website is the best way to find it out, because it is a complicated schedule.
And then the whole thing runs until March 27th, and then the theater, I'm assuming, will return to its regular configuration.
Yeah, that'll be a sad day. You know?
And we'll what will you be doing, Julianne, after that?
Looking for my next job.
Ditto.
I'll and be at home with my two kids.
I guess there are new plays in the works.
Well, I have a play that's opening down at the Humana Festival in Louisville, Kentucky, and I'm actually leaving tomorrow morning to go do that again. I came back for a few days for this.
And I want to thank the three of you for being on our show. Adam Rapp, who is the playwright responsible for Rose, Paraffin, and Nursing, also the director of Rose, and Julianne Nicholson and Louis Kinselmi, who appear each in two of the plays. And it's at the Rattlestick Playwrights Theater in the West Village, just behind the Village Vanguard. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.